Good morning. Welcome to Local Matters. This is Ben Rogers. Excited to be with our Senator Paul Bailey. Good morning, Senator Bailey.
Good morning, Ben. It's so good to be with you today.
It's good to have you. Always great information when you come by, especially from the state viewpoint. And I just want to take a minute to brag on you. A couple weeks ago, I had you as one of my speakers at my first ever that I was a part of that ran on the County Official Association, the Tennessee Annual Conference. I had asked you 2 or 3 months ago when we were planning the general session if you would like to come speak and give a welcome to our members of almost 400 people that were in attendance. And you brought exactly what they wanted to hear, just state updates. They like hearing from their legislators. They like to know and talk to you and hear from you. So how often do you go to engagements? I mean, I know you go to meetings and stuff, but how often are you in front of that many people at one time? Those are your statewide constituents. How often are you there in front of people?
Well, first of all, thank you for asking me to be a part, especially your inaugural convention as the executive director of COATS. And so I was honored that you had asked me to be one of your guest speakers and to welcome actually elected officials and staff members from all across the state there that day. And so it was certainly great. So your question is how often? And it just depends. Many times a year I'm asked by different organizations to come and speak to their conferences, whether they're in the Gatlinburg area, Chattanooga area, Nashville area. So I try to make the attempt to go as often as I can. Sometimes there is a scheduling conflict and I'm not able to be there, but for the most part, it's always good because especially whenever you're going to speak to a statewide organization, the perspective that you get from those that you meet during those conferences, because, you know, different people from different parts of the state, they have different perspectives. And so it's certainly good to be able to interact. And, you know, I told the story about my youngest son, Caleb, about him getting a double major at Rhodes College there in Memphis. So the trustee, one of his majors is going to be in accounting. And so the trustee of Shelby County actually approached me after the conference and gave me her card. And she said, hey, look, if Caleb's looking for a job once he graduates, I'd love to have him come to work for me.
That's great. Maybe you got him an inroad by just being there. Well, it was an honor to have you there. And there's, you know, you were the first person I called. You're my senator. Known you for longer than the time you've been in the Senate, and I didn't know. I didn't really. I mean, I invited the lieutenant governor, being in Nashville, and Governor Lee and Speaker Sexton, but you were the first call I made because you're my senator, and I wanted you there, and I want people to know, one, I'm proud of you. Two, you and I are friends, and, well, and I could always go with you. Now, we may not agree, and you may I may call you with a piece of legislation. You say, now, Ben, that's just, you know, plumb ridiculous. I can't sponsor that. And you haven't yet, and you may or may not. But I know if you say that, it's out of respect and love, and we're going to, you know, we're going to be friends no matter what. But I am proud of the work you've done for our area and for our state. And I basically wanted to show you off. Here's my senator. He's better than yours. And we're happy to have him in Nashville. And the information you brought was good. So back to your son just a second.
Sure.
Does he have a desire to stay in Shelby County after he graduates? Or does
I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, obviously, he is getting a major in accounting and then a major in political law. So he may go back next year and get a master's degree in accounting. He has his heart set on politics in some shape or form. And so I'm expecting him to be looking for a job with some political consultant and campaign in 2026. We're going to have a gubernatorial election, be selecting a new governor for the state of Tennessee. So I'm expecting him to be working in that capacity. Also, Senator Hagerty will be up for reelection. You know, a lot of individuals have been expecting him to get an appointment in the Trump administration, which hasn't happened. So that's going to be either he decides to run for governor, stay in the Senate, or whatever pathway he chooses. So there could even be an open seat in the Senate. There will probably be an open congressional seat right here in the Upper Cumberland. So he'll have a lot of opportunities as well as others as far as if he wants to pursue a political career. He may go into business, some business somewhere, but, you know, for the most part, I think he really wants to be involved in political world some way.
How often do you and your family, wife, kids included, talk about politics?
Probably every night.
It's just in the blood, right?
It is. It's a topic of conversation, you know, that we have. And, you know, there are times that my wife will say, okay, I'm done talking. Mm-hmm. I don't want to talk politics anymore. Let's do something else.
Yep. I've gotten that before.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit more politics. Some of the things you brought to us, and this will probably roll over to our next segment. So we'll make sure to take a break. But excuse me, one of the things you talked to us that morning was the first bill has been filed. Is that the correct terminology?
It's Senate Bill 1 and House Bill 1, both leaders of the Senate, Leader Johnson, Leader Lambert of the House, have filed what's now known as Senate Bill 1 and House Bill 1, which is the Education Freedom Scholarship. This is the governor's legislation where he is expanding school vouchers, if you will. Of course, they're calling them scholarships. So this is going to expand vouchers statewide. Mm-hmm. Of course, the original form of the bill calls for 20,000 scholarships to be given out, and the first 10,000 of those go to individuals that are 300% below the poverty level. So that's where the first 10,000 scholarships would go, and then it's open basically for the second 10,000 to be given to just about anyone that applies for a scholarship. And there's $7,050 scholarships.
How many years have we been talking about a voucher bill?
Oh, we've been talking about vouchers now for several years. You know, we passed a voucher program that's in Shelby County, Davidson, and Hamilton County. So there are current voucher programs in those three large counties in the state that, again, was designed to help those that are in poverty that to be able to go into a better school situation than just being stuck in maybe a failing public school.
Right.
And just right off the bat, Ben, I want to say that, you know, I'm for school choice and I'm for parental choice. I believe that we already have school choice simply sure. because you can choose where you want to send your child to school. Now, your choice may not be as expansive here in the Upper Cumberland area as it would be in more of a metro suburban area like Nashville, Knoxville, Chattanooga, or Shelby County. But so I want your listeners to know that, you know, I certainly support parental choice and school choice. The issue that I have in representing the Upper Cumberland and representing small rural counties is that when you pull those students out of the school system, and I'm going to use Van Buren County as an example, there's 700 K-12 students in Van Buren County. If you pull just five of those students out, they currently receive close to $10,000 per student in the TISA formula, which that is our state school mm-hmm. funding formula. And because they're a distressed county, a small rural county, they receive close to $10,000 per student. You pull five students out of there, that's $50,000. Their annual sales tax base is $1.2 million. Now, obviously, schools are funded by their property tax, but whenever they lose $50,000 just by losing, say, five students, and this is hypothetical,
sure,
but then that goes back to the property owners having to make up that $50,000 because there's so many state mandates in place right now on our school systems that they have to meet certain criteria. And by just, say, losing five students from K through 12, whatever that mix may be, that $50,000 could be detrimental to a small county like Jackson County, Clay County, Pickett County. And so I want to make sure, and the governor's bill addresses that because that was one of the things that I kept speaking to him about last year, is that I want to take care of my small rural counties. Now, they have given an exemption for 1 year, but I think that we have to go beyond that because schools are actually funded a year behind. And so it's based right. on their student population. Their funding next year will be based on this year's student population. And so it's going to be 2 to 3 years rolling forward before we actually know the ramifications of how many students that some of these rural schools could lose.
Yeah, I think your points are well made. And a couple weeks ago, I had on Lee McHenry, the chair of the school board for Putnam County, and he talked extensively about vouchers and how it would impact. And he didn't really – I didn't ask him to offer his pro or con or his pro or against view, but he did really well explain it. And he said a lot of what you said. And my question was, is this going to affect the property taxpayer in these counties? If the bill passes, are the county commissions going to have to make up maintenance of effort to the school system because the voucher money has went with a child that was in the public school system and that child's now at a private school? And correct. I think you all are working on that legislation to minimize that impact, right, on counties.
Well, that's exactly what the bill addresses, yeah. Is that there's a hold harmless for 1 year.
Right.
And so I want to expand that to make sure that as we roll forward that small rural counties are held harmless beyond just 1 year.
And I don't want to speak for all the other legislators in the General Assembly, but I'm assuming they have – most of them have that same viewpoint, right?
Well, especially the rural legislators, right, like myself, that represent a rural area. Mm-hmm. We all understand that how detrimental it could be to a small rural county and to the taxpayers of that county to lose state funding. Now, again, I want our students to have the best education possible. Our state constitution requires us to provide a free education for every child in the state of Tennessee. So we're bound by our constitution to provide an education for those students. And we have failing schools in Tennessee. I don't know that we have failing schools. In fact, I'm very positive that we don't have failing schools here in the 15th Senate District. We have very good schools.
Right.
But we do have certain areas of the state that we have failing schools, and we want to be able to make sure that those students have an opportunity. The other thing go ahead.
Let me just stop you right quick because don't forget that thought. We're at a break, but don't forget that thought because I'm with Senator Paul Bailey. He has brought me great information so far in this first segment. We got two more segments with him. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to Local Matters. Just blessed and excited to have Senator Paul Bailey with me. Already some great information this morning, talking some legislation. One bill, House Bill and Senate Bill 1 has already been filed. It's the governor's bill on vouchers. We were talking extensively about that. You had a thought, and I had to cut you off, and I'm sorry. I hate doing that, but it is part of the radio show. With the money, you were going to say.
Yeah, so previous legislative session, as far as how the money was going to flow, it was going to flow back to the parents and, for all kinds of expenses. And one of the concerns that I've always had is accountability. We have, I view a scholarship program already in place. It's called the HOPE Scholarship, which is for high school seniors that are entering college. And so we put accountability measures in there. The money flows directly to the educational institution that child is going to, or that student, that college student is going to. That's exactly what I want the school voucher program. So there's full accountability that the money flows directly to that educational institution so that we know that there is full accountability. And, yeah. And that basically goes to pay tuition and the fees there at the school. That's, to me, is what a scholarship is designed to do, is pay for the education of that child. And I want to make sure that child is that the money that's going for that child is flowing into that educational institution.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense to me. And it'll be interesting to see how this session plays out. I have no dog in the fight for right. my position at COAT. I will not be calling you with my opinion on vouchers. we'll make other requests for you on from our side of it. But I know it's going to – I think – and this is opinion again, Paul, if – people understand what you just said, it's probably going to go over really well, right?
Right, but there's going to be a lot of misinformation out there.
Yes.
And so, and look, there'll be individuals criticize me for whatever position that I take on it. I just want your listeners to understand that I will do what I feel is in the best interest of the 15th Senate District.
Yep.
Now, that doesn't mean that my position is in the best interest of Shelby County, Davidson County, Williamson County, Knox County. It'll be in the best interest of the six counties that I represent here in Middle Tennessee. And whether that legislation moves forward or fails does not impact what my belief and what I feel like my constituents want me to do here in the Upper Cumberland.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons I have you on is to get the word out, right?
Right.
I mean, I know you are very good about getting information out from your office and from your staff, but it's a month before session starts, and I think it's a good time to talk about it. So let's move on to some other potential legislation that you all may be discussing. It's very rare that y'all do constitutional amendments. I mean, how many have you done since you've been in the Senate?
Well, we did a constitutional amendment to make sure that we never had a state income tax since I've been in the legislature.
Right.
So we put that in the Constitution. And now we're on our and so you have to have – anytime you're doing a constitutional amendment, it has to pass two general assemblies. So basically it takes 4 years to pass because you introduce it in one general assembly, and then whenever a new general assembly, which is coming up here in January – then we'll have be a second General Assembly. And then when you do a constitutional amendment, it basically goes on the ballot with the governor. That's what our Constitution requires, that any kind of constitutional amendment must be ratified by the voters who are voting in the gubernatorial election. So this year we're basically eliminating – there is in our Constitution – the ability for the state, if we wanted to levy a state property tax. This was basically made dormant many years ago when we implemented a state sales tax. And so this time we are coming back, we're eliminating it out of the state constitution forever as far as us as a state being able to levy a property tax on Tennesseans. That's going to be left up to your local governments, but the state's not going to be able to do a property tax if this passes.
Has the state of Tennessee ever levied a property tax?
They've never levied a property tax since we started collecting a sales tax.
Okay.
And that goes back, gosh, I'm going to be wrong on this, but it goes back to like the 30s,
right.
The 20s or 30s,
sure.
Whenever we actually started collecting a state sales tax. And then at that point in time, we did away with the property tax, or we rolled it back to zero. And so it's just been dormant, if you will, for all these years. We've just decided that we want to go ahead, eliminate the possibility of ever levying a property tax on Tennesseans.
Would that affect any other revenue source you all get?
Absolutely not, because okay. It is a zero factor right now. We're just basically making it taking it out of the Constitution so that that some rogue legislature in the future I can't come back and levy a property tax on the citizens of Tennessee.
Well, this is why I like going to the expert and somebody that actually votes.
I don't know if I'm an expert.
Well, I saw on Nashville News a couple of weeks ago, I think it was a senator, maybe not, maybe been a state rep, that said this would impact the state's revenue by hundreds of millions of dollars. And I thought, we don't have a property tax right now.
We don't.
What are they they referring? So anyway, misinformation, I'm sure. Maybe I didn't understand as a listener. Who knows? But so if you vote this year, then it will go to 26.
It'll go on the
referendum.
Yes, it'll go on the ballot in 2026. Of course, we'll be coming in January. So it'll be January of 2025. And then it'll be on the ballot for governor in 2026, in November of 2026.
Well, and so sales tax has been our driver, right? It's what
sales tax is our main source of revenue in the state of Tennessee.
There's not, I'm afraid I'd be wrong if I gave a number. There's a few states in our country that do a property tax, a statewide property tax, but I don't feel like it's real common. Is it? Am I wrong there? Is there a lot of states that do a state property tax?
I think most states have a hybrid system where they do a sales tax and an income tax. Not many states do a property tax. It's usually property tax is left up to the local governments to as a source of revenue for them. But a lot of states have the hybrid of state income tax and sales tax.
I haven't been aware of everything, but last year the topic was capping property taxes at the local level.
Right.
This year we're going to statewide, remove it from the, and I think that's that for Probably taxpayers, I think they'll appreciate that.
And let me just say this right before you go to a break. The premise behind last year's legislation on trying to cap local property tax is just simply that county commissions and county mayors get themselves in a financial bind because no one wants to raise taxes. And whenever services are needed because their county is growing and the revenue is lagging behind the growth as far as coming in, but yet they're having to pay for immediate services infrastructure right then, they're just waiting too long before they actually make adjustments on that. And so it's a situation where you have counties that do a 58-cent property tax. That's not fair to the constituents of living in that county. So the state's just trying to bring awareness to those county commissions, those county mayors, that look, you need to be making incremental adjustments as you go along and not waiting to it's so devastating to your property owners.
Will that come back up again, you think?
I've not heard rumors of it this year. I think it brought such an awareness last year and again. And look, I know we're saying that to local governments, but I can also tell you that, you know, even the General Assembly struggles with, you know, trying to make any adjustments. If you remember the Improve Act for our roads, then the Modernization Act for our roads.
Sure.
And we are so far behind in road construction, building roads right now, that even though we've passed those, we're years behind, and now we're trying to play catch up.
Great information. I'm with Senator Paul Bailey. He'll be back with me just a moment after this break. Welcome back to Local Matters. Ben Rogers with Senator Paul Bailey. We are here talking about great information. Upcoming session is starting the second Tuesday of January next year, just around the corner. Senator Bailey's been in the Senate since 2014, served in the House before that, represents District 15, which is here in Upper Cumberland, six counties, and has just been a great advocate for everybody in this community. Again, Paul, thank you for your service to us and everything you do and helping me with things. I appreciate. So, one of the things you highlighted at my conference again that you spoke at a couple weeks ago, and again, I can't say enough how great it was for our members to hear from a legislator, a longtime serving senator at that, about legislation. You had mentioned, I get, and this could be a hot topic for some people, but you didn't turn it into a hot topic. What you were trying to make aware is that Shelby County, Memphis, actually had their own referendum, and it was the referendum was about gun control, and that was trying to supersede state law, right?
Well, it did. And so the legislature is going to be looking at legislation that will basically try to keep any municipality or local government from trying to have a ballot measure that's in direct conflict with state law. And that's exactly what we saw in Memphis. They were passing handgun elimination. They were also passing a form of a red flag law. And that's all in direct conflict with Tennessee state law. And so and those referendums actually passed there in Memphis and Shelby County. So, you know, we're going to take a real serious look at how we deal with those situations as far as those local governments that are passing or trying to do referendums that are in direct conflict with Tennessee state law.
Well, one of the things that CTAS does every election cycle for county elected officials is the orientation program. And the first thing I would do to our county commissioners, who's the legislative body on the local government level, so county commissioners and city council, they're the ones that are passing things and putting and implementing local rules or policies, like I guess you could say, in a county and passing the budget. One of the first things I tell them is you do not write or implement your own laws, right?
Right.
You cannot do anything the state TCA or Constitution doesn't allow you to do as a county.
Right.
And so we tell them that up front. Now, not every new commissioner attends the orientation. They're required to do an orientation, but they may not actually be in person. It seems like in this situation, they were trying to create their own law and start doing their own legislation, really. Yeah. And well, you can't do that.
Right, exactly. So one thing that, and I'm sure you teach during your program, especially when you were with CTAS, that, you know, local governments are political subdivisions. They are a division of the state of Tennessee. They are created by the state of Tennessee. So therefore, although they're created by the state, we can also uncreate them.
Right. That's right.
but, aside from that,
sure.
let me just say, Shelby County has an issue. They have a huge crime issue down there. What the crime issue is, having a district attorney that is not enforcing Tennessee law. We also have judges that are in Shelby County that are not enforcing state law. They're not setting bail high enough on individuals that once they're arrested, brought into custody, the bail is set so low that that individual immediately bonds out. They're back on the street, and they're creating heinous crimes.
Right.
They're committing, I said creating, yeah. but they're committing heinous crimes.
Sure.
And so we're seeing those repeat offenders back in the system. And so if Shelby County's, if they would just have a district attorney, have judges that would basically enforce state law, then a lot of the problems that they're having there on that local level relative to gun control or gun issues would go away if they would just purely enforce what current state law says.
Yeah, and I mean, it sounds simple, right?
Right.
And as a commissioner in Putnam County, and I have no desire to serve any other capacity. We have you. I don't need to be doing that role. I don't want to be state rep. I don't want to be anything else besides a county commissioner. I could never imagine having the ability as a commissioner to create my own laws.
Right.
Counties would do so many crazy things.
Right. Right.
If they had that power, and thank God for a TCA and a constitution saying you have to stay within these parameters of the law,
right.
because we're there for the people.
Right.
Right. We're there to make quality of life better for the people. And we don't need to change that.
Well, and what's interesting, they're passing that referendum relative to handgun law and red flag laws, but yet they're going to be expecting a district attorney and judges to enforce those local laws, if you will, that's not currently enforcing state laws that would keep them from even having to have a referendum. So that's the irony of the entire situation, is that they're creating something that they've got the legal ability to already do, but yet they're not doing it.
Yeah. Well, I know that the legislature will do what they can to minimize those actions by local legislative bodies. What other legislation are you looking forward to this year? Have you got a list? You don't have to give me the list, but I know you're a hard worker. I know you're always thinking, and like you said, you and your family talk politics all the time. Have you got things specifically you're going to sponsor that you can share with us, or do we need to wait till next year?
No, I mean, real quickly, this is something that goes back to 2023, July 2023, relative to the Cookeville Regional Medical Center. We had our emergency room doctors. What people don't understand, emergency room doctors, radiologists, pathologists, and anesthesiologists, Tennessee law dictates that those four professions have to be employed by a company or a corporation. The hospital can't employ those four medical professionals individually, like they do hospitalists, like they do orthos, like they do OBGYNs. And so a law was created in 1971 that says that those individuals have to be employed and contracted through a company or corporation to the hospital. July 2023, the Emergency Room Doctor Corporation files bankruptcy, gives Cookeville Regional Medical Center 13 days to have to find another company or corporation to supply emergency room doctors at Cookeville Regional Medical Center. So therefore, I have been introducing legislation that basically repeals it. It's called corporate practice of medicine. I'm trying to repeal corporate practice of medicine so that our hospitals can hire those four professionals, anesthesiologists, radiologists, pathologists, emergency room doctors, as direct employees, or it's a hybrid to where they can continue to work with a corporation or a company that has those doctors. It's just a hybrid system. And you would not believe the pushback that I've got from some members of the General Assembly. You would think that that is a freedom and a capitalist mm-hmm. thought process to allow a hospital to be able to hire those individuals on their own. But I got pushback. We didn't get it moved forward last year. I'm going to reintroduce it this year. because it put Cookeville Regional Medical Center in a situation where they did not have negotiating power to find the best company, corporation, to supply those emergency room doctors. And so whether they got the best deal or didn't get the best deal, that remains to be seen. But given a 13-day notice, they didn't have a lot of time to go out and basically work the market as to see who would be the best. They just had to get doctors in there to make sure that their patients are seen.
What's the push? Well, did they tell you why they're pushing back?
Well, it's like anything. You've got your special interest lobbyists down there that work for the anesthesiologists, that work for the emergency room doctors. And, so they, those different professions, they hire really good lobbyists. And yeah. So they work against us on those pieces. Whenever, to me, it's a no-brainer. I mean, there's no reason that we should even have that law in place today.
What committees do you know what committees you'll be on?
Well, I chair the Commerce and Labor Committee, which is a very diverse committee. I'm expecting return as chairman of the Commerce and Labor Committee, which is, so it's economic community development, it's TEN care, it's labor and workforce development, it's commerce and insurance, which if you have a license to cut hair or be an electrician, you're licensed through commerce and insurance. I currently serve on Transportation and Safety Committee as well as the Fiscal Review Committee. So, I serve at the pleasure of the Lieutenant Governor. And so wherever he decides that he wants me to serve and what committees that he wants me to serve on, I'll be happy to serve.
Are you the second longest tenured senator?
Oh, no, not no. My seniority went up this year because we lost three really good members of the Senate. But so obviously my seniority moved up. But no, I'm probably mid-range right now.
Does that impact where you're at on committees, or do they just look at the individual and what value you bring with your expertise and background?
It's both. It's both. I was very fortunate. I was a freshman senator when I was named chairman of Transportation and Safety. I mean, my third year as being a state senator, and that's very unheard of for a freshman senator to be named a committee chairman. But Lieutenant Governor McNally named me as chair.
Well, your background's transportation.
Well, it is.
Right.
It is. But still, to pass over members that had a lot of seniority,
sure.
to choose me to be the chairman of that. And then 2 years later, when the Commerce and Labor Committee came open, he chose me to lead that committee. And so I've been very blessed and very fortunate in the time that I've spent in the state Senate.
Well, you've done a great job. I brag on you, but I really mean it. We have opportunity to have some good legislators, and you represent six counties, Upper Cumberland, and Upper Cumberland has good senators, and it's representing them in Nashville. And I know you work well with all those senators.
Absolutely.
You have to get things done, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, Senator Bailey, I appreciate you being
here.
You bet. Always great information from Paul Bailey. Senate District 15 is what he represents since 2014, and just does a good job. I'll be seeing a lot of you come January.
Look forward to it.
As my new role, I hope I don't wear you out. But our elected officials, they told me after you left, and I'll shut up, but they told me after you left my conference that you had historically worked hard for them. Good. And they thought it was a good gesture that I had you hit there, not only because you're my friend, but they do appreciate the work you've done. So you're not only working for just our citizens, but you're working for our local government officials because you used to be one.
Right,
so,
exactly.
Folks, hope you've enjoyed it like I have. Senator Paul Bailey with me here on Local Matters. Hope you have a great weekend. Remember, it's a lot easier to smile than to frown. Make somebody's day. Be kind to one another. We'll see you next week.